Hitler if you think we're on the run. We are the boys.
It's another edition of the Dead's Army podcast. This fortnight centering on the Christmas special DVD release. That's the Region 2 version that was released in the UK just before Christmas 2007. Oh, I'm saying that and it feels like it was such a long time ago and it's only February. We've got an interview with Rafe Montague, who's the guy who put the DVD together and indeed has been involved in several of the Dad's Army DVD releases. He'll be speaking to us in a short while. Following that, Tony and I discuss the actual content of the special features in a feature that we're splitting into two parts. So this podcast, you'll hear us discuss half of the DVD specials, and on podcast 16, we'll conclude by talking about all of the remaining special features. It's such a fantastic disc that if Tony and I were to record all of our comments, then the podcast would be disproportionately long. So without any further ado, we'll move straight into the interview with Rafe Montague. I'm joined now by Rafe Montague, who was involved in the coordination of the Christmas specials DVDs. Good evening, Rafe.
Good evening.
Good evening, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I just wonder if we can start perhaps by asking you to explain your involvement in the production of the DVD.
Well, I first of all should declare that I am a big fan. I wouldn't have taken the job on otherwise. I previously worked for 2Entertain, I still do in a self-employed capacity on Doctor Who releases, so I have a sort of relationship there, and I made inquiries, I suppose 2 or 3 years back now, to find out what they were planning for Dad's Army on DVD. And to cut a long story short, I was given the wonderful opportunity of coordinating the technical remastering of all the episodes for DVD, as well as putting together the extras which went out on each release.
Sure. So in addition to the Christmas specials DVD, you've been involved in every release over the last couple of years.
That's right. The first volume was, or the first release, which is series 1 and 2, was sort of partly underway when I got involved, so it doesn't quite have as much of my input on it as the others do, but yes, basically all the episodes themselves were remastered under my supervision for the project.
All of the series DVDs have the additional documentary We Are the Boys.
That's
which,
right.
Which I understand you were involved in.
Yes, well, what happened was that the interviews that were being done for Britain's greatest sitcoms, a number of interviews had been set up with people connected with Dad's Army at about the same time that the DVD series was commissioned. And so in practice, a lot of the interviews were done in the same time and place, although, you know, in fact, there were a different set of questions that were put to each interviewee. One lot for Britain's greatest sitcom, and one lot for the DVD. But if the backgrounds look familiar, that's why.
I see. Okay, I mean, if you're talking about the Christmas special DVD, there's a lot of additional special features on there, a lot of it which, you know, I think is fantastic. It was the first time I'd seen it as a fan. I mean, how did you actually go about locating that additional material for that release?
Well, the BBC has a sort of online internal film catalogue, film and videotape library catalogue, so it isn't actually too difficult, usually, if you put the right words in, to find things, although sometimes a bit of personal knowledge helps. And I still think that the definitive guide for Dad's Army and sort of extra information is the book produced by the Appreciation Society. So in fact, it's called Dad's Army, A Companion. I actually, in many cases, had to look no further than you know, the list in there, and then had to find nearly all of it is BBC material. There are one or two exceptions, but you know, so it wasn't a great it wasn't really too difficult to track things down. The only thing that is elusive is this 8mm film shot by a Mr. Woods, which clips have been shown on previous documentaries, but never the whole thing. I was able to contact his son, who is not sure whether he has not, whether he's lost the film or whether it wasn't returned to him by the previous BBC producer that used it. But in any event, we haven't been able to find the original. There is a not very good VHS copy knocking around, which I have seen, but that's one extra that if we'd been able to track down the original film and do a proper new transfer, that might have been included, but in reality it wasn't.
No, it was still good, even just to get the ones that we did locate. Even the Christmas Nights with the Stars, I mean, a lot of fans won't have seen those. I mean, they didn't make it onto the earlier DVDs. So.
Absolutely, and I mean, one thing I should explain for those who are watching those is that originally they were transmitted as sketches within a show with other artists. We've topped and tailed them as if they were episodes, at least those that survive. In fact, Broadcast to Empire has been broadcast in its own right on BBC television in fairly recent years, I think around Christmas time.
Sure.
Although I haven't actually managed to find that version in the library, but not that I've cut anything out. But, you know, I've topped and tailed them as if they were episodes.
Well, yeah, one of the things that, again, for people who hadn't seen them when they were originally transmitted, they do look like mini-episodes, and for me it was terrific because it was just like finding, well, three, albeit one of them you didn't have all the original visuals, but it's just like, you know, watching brand new episodes, which is superb. If there was lots and lots of material to choose from, was there anything that you chose to omit or leave out?
Well, not in the sense that I looked at something and thought, oh, I don't like that. The restrictions on me were really to do with rights and budgets, in that what is put out on DVD usually are things where the rights can be easily cleared. Now, there are some bits and pieces which are well known about in Dad's Army circles, which are, in rights terms, more problematic. One is the ITV Royal Command performance, in that it, by its very nature, is ITV, so we would have had to probably pay a considerable sum to obtain that from ITV. The one that is particularly problematic is the BBC's Royal Gala performance, because it would seem that for some reason none of the cast signed contracts for that. It was perhaps done for charity, I'm not sure. But in consequence, there's no contract to refer to. And I actually want to revisit this, but because if, you know, if anything special might be put out for the 40th anniversary, this is one that I would love to include, because it isn't that, you know, we've got it physically in the BBC. That is not a problem. And there are other little bits and pieces, like Bruce Forsyth's Generation Game, Morgan and Wise, where I felt that, or I suspected that, because there were very famous people in those sketches, Elton John to name one, you know, that we'd end up having to pay large amounts because those people were in the sketches as well.
No, I understand, yeah. Okay, well, it's good to know that this release doesn't represent a definitive catalogue of all that's Dad's Army, and there is a little bit more still, possibly, that may be seen and made widely accessible.
Yes, I mean, if I can find a way, I'm certainly, you know, I'm it isn't that I've certainly closed the door on that possibility.
Well, going back to the discs, Battle of the Giants represents a first, in as much as we've got a commentary on that by Jimmy Perry and David Croft, which is superb. It's really great to hear their comments and their memories of the recording of the episodes. Did you consider using other surviving members of the cast at all?
I would like to have. It was purely a budgetary issue that I had, frankly, a limited budget for the whole project, and I managed to squeeze some money out just to do Battle of the Giants, because, you know, I thought, if I'm going to have a commentary on anything, let's do it on that. I would love to have done some more. I mean, I have little hesitation in saying that Bill Pertree, Frank Williams and Pamela Kundal would all be, I think, up for doing something like that.
Sure.
Ian Lavender, I I think is harder to pin down, shall we say. And Clive Dunn, well, I did visit him in Portugal to do the interview. His eyesight isn't so good, so whether he would have felt able to do that, I'm not sure. But it is another thing that I'll be looking at again, the possibility of commentaries.
Well, it's a fantastic achievement to have both Jimmy and David giving their thoughts on it. We mentioned them earlier, but the Appreciation Society clearly have access to a lot of material as well. I mean, how significant was their involvement?
Well, they were incredibly helpful. They were particularly helpful to me because I had dug out all these photographs from the BBC Picture Library, but in fact some of them it wasn't clear which episode they were from. So they were able to help me with that, but also they have their own collection of photographs which were taken by non-BBC photographers, often amateurs, and they very kindly contributed those to the photo galleries, so I mixed them in with the more official photographs, which gives a different angle on the production, because the BBC pictures tend to be very official.
Sure.
Publicity pictures. They very rarely show you any sense of behind the scenes, whereas some of those in the Appreciation Society do show you just that.
Well, they're a little bit more candid.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. That's great. Lastly, then, one question I did want to ask you was about the additional material in Battle of the Giants. Now, this is great to see some new scenes that were omitted originally. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, as people probably understand, most episodes included sequences which were shot on location, and anything that was done on location in those days was shot on film, whereas anything that was in the studio was on videotape. Now, usually when the program was made, the film was played into the studio and recorded onto videotape, and after that the film really wasn't needed anymore and it was thrown away. Which is a great shame, because with today's technology we can do new transfers from the film and get better results than they did in those days.
Yeah, sure.
Now, for some reason with Battle of the Giants, perhaps because it was a special feature-length episode, the film inserts, which are not inconsiderable in length, were kept. And not only were they kept, but when we transferred them, we found that there were a few little scenes, only just over a minute's worth, which had been cut out from the final version, which was transmitted. So we were able to reinsert them.
Which is fantastic. I don't suppose there's any chance of those that reappearing or reoccurring with the other episodes.
Well, if they do, if any other film comes to light, it almost certainly won't be from the BBC Library, but it's not unheard of for collectors or film fairs to suddenly turn up with these things.
Sure.
Films get put into skips by one person and then taken out by another, and sometimes years later they resurface. So I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's not that likely. But let's not forget, the really important thing is to find those three missing episodes.
Well, absolutely. That would be an absolute fantastic individual DVD release. That's something I'd love to see again, those three episodes. And I'm sure that's got to be the top of the list for almost any fan in terms
absolutely.
Of what they would like to see.
Yeah.
Well, Rafe, thank you ever so much for spending the time talking to us.
It's a pleasure.
It's been a very interesting conversation, and thanks very much indeed.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with James and Tony.
Hello, James. How are you?
Hello, Tony. Yeah, not too bad, thank you. You?
Jolly good. Yes, I'm fine, thank you. We've got to talk about the special features on the Christmas Specials DVD, just out, or out about a month or so.
We haven't got to, but we will.
The first special feature is called Resisting the Aggressor. But James, how long did this last?
This was only, I think, 15-20 minutes sketch. Okay. It was originally part of the Christmas Night with the Stars series, and this was part of the 1969 special.
The setup for this mini-episode, we'll call it, is Captain Mannering and the platoon acting out how Britain has been undefeated over the centuries or millenniums. What did you think of it?
I thought it was quite a good concept, really. It's clearly supposed to be a slightly different episode, and I think it fits in perfectly. I mean, obviously, I think it's not as based in real war as some of the other episodes. But no, the characters are great. I mean, what did you think of how the characters were all dressed up as various different things?
I was really interested. I mean, I've watched it for the first time today ever, so it's, today really is for me first impressions on this, and it's quite good to actually discover something new on Dad's Army, because you get to the point where you think you've seen it all, and then this comes out, and I've never seen this. Regarding the characters, it's never my favourite when they're dressed up in silly costumes. We've said this quite a few times before, that I actually prefer the more serious side. Nevertheless, it's quite gentle, it was good to watch, I enjoyed watching it. Can I ask, this is done on the stage, isn't it, as opposed to, like, a studio, is that right?
Or no, this was done in the studio, this was recorded the same day as the Series 3 episode of Manhunt. So it's all done in exactly the same set. I mean, there's only two rooms, it's a simple little sketch, as you'd expect a 15-20 minute sketch to be, I guess. But yes, it's all done on set.
From the camera work, I mean, I'm not an expert on camera work or anything, but from the camera work, it does appear that it's all aimed in sort of the same direction, as if they're on a stage and the audience is just coming at them from one direction. Maybe I have to watch that again and see.
Maybe you're incredibly observant there, and you've actually noticed something about the production that is something I wouldn't have picked up on at all. I'll have to rewatch that. I think it's it feels a little bit like a stage, I suppose, but then again, all of those scenes within the church hall and the office, you get shot from one angle generally. So, you know, I didn't notice anything different there.
I might have made that complete, though.
Interesting. What I did find interesting about this little sketch was that each of the characters, obviously, you know, if you normally describe these characters in general terms, you'd say Mannerin is patriotic, he's prudish, Walker is obviously a spiv, you know, Jones is a little bit of a manual worker, perhaps. And of course, what they've done, in giving them a new character to act out in this play within the sketch, they've given them a character that typifies everything, and obviously you've got Mannerin dressed up in Union Jacks. For some reason, his costume reminded me of Ginger Spice when she did her Union Jack miniskirt. Not that there's much really to compare between Jerry Halliwell and Arthur Lowe, but he's dressed up as John Ball, the epitome of everything British. Wilson as Napoleon, and of course later on Arthur Lowe dresses up as Napoleon as well within A Soldier's Farewell. So they both had a shot at that. Jones, agriculture, Walker, commerce, you know, they're both representative of their trades. I thought Godfrey was a fantastic Julius Caesar.
Yes. Oh, very, very, well, yes.
he was the star of this for me. I thought he had a very, very small part, but he just looked the part perfectly. Fraser and Pike, both entertaining in their own way. What obviously is the overall joke here is that Bannerin has completely rewritten history. And the watchwords, you know, they shall not pass, they did not pass. It's just a load of old cobblers because they did pass.
They started off speaking about the Romans and Julius Caesar not managing to conquer Britain, and that was completely lost on me. I thought, all right, yeah, okay. And it was only when they started talking about the Normans, and I'm thinking, I know a little bit more about the Normans, I'm thinking, well, they did conquer Britain, didn't they?
They did.
And as you think back, you think, oh, yeah, it's all been a joke. So, yeah, I didn't appreciate that bit.
It is funny, and I think that's the whole crux of things. I think Wilson does point it out at one point and gets a flea in his ear from Mannerin.
Yes. Something I've been thinking as we've watched a lot of the Dad's Army episodes, every so often, very famous actors of the time that get their names mentioned in the episodes. In Resisting the Aggressor, we've had Greta Garbo, Charles Boyer, Eddie Cantor. Because of the generation that I part of, I don't know any of these people. I think I probably just about might have come across Greta Garbo, but Charles Boyer and Eddie... I really one day ought to sit down and watch one of these old films that've got these people in them, just to sort of relate to it a bit better. Because I just never know who they are.
There's a smattering of famous name drops throughout a number of episodes, usually when Pike's been to the cinema. But I have to say that I'm with you a lot of the time. I don't know who these individuals are either. And I have to go and Google them, find out who they are.
Well, that fairly nicely rounds off our little chat about resisting the aggressor.
Moving on to the next sketch for Christmas Night of the Stars. This is the Cornish Floral Dance. This formed part of the 1970 Christmas Night of the Stars special and was recorded at the same time as Uninvited Guests, which is part of Series 4. So, Tony, no visuals this time, unfortunately.
I'm quite grateful to the producers of this DVD that they did give us the scene of the church hall to look at, and the camera moving around it helps you imagine the scene, even though it's an empty hall that you're looking at, and you're hearing the play going on through the speakers. I was quite grateful for that. There's words going on the bottom on this one, and I was a bit distracting, but...
It is distracting, but it's interesting as well. There's one way of doing this, or put it on and not look at the television and just listen to the sketch, and the other one is whereby you turn the sound off and you read the words going across the bottom. It's because you and I are blokes, Tony. We can't do two things at once. You wait for the emails to come in now.
But none of that is to do with the Cornish Floral Dance itself, the episode. So what have you got to say about the episode we've just listened to?
I think it's a very great shame that they've lost the visuals to this. I'd have very much liked to have seen it, as I would the other Christmas Night with the Stars sketch that was filmed at the same time as Loneliness and Long Distance Walker back in 68. That's lost, and we don't even have the audio soundtrack, unfortunately. But the thing that struck me the most about this, again, as I'm sure it would have done everybody, is the song. And it's quite rare that you hear the platoon or any of the actors try and express any kind of comedy through singing. And I thought it was excellent. I have to say it was really good. And I'm very glad the scene where they're practicing has been carried over into the radio show of the Godiva Affair.
Godiva Affair, yes.
So yes, I think it works. I think the song is the key thing there. Though.
So the Godiva Affair, it's the radio play where they have the floral dance, isn't it? And the TV play has something a bit different.
Scotty Morris dancing.
Morris dancing, that's it.
Where Jones whiffles.
Oh, yes.
He whiffles.
Yes. This particular episode, Cornish Floral Dance, Mannering nearly swears again.
Oh,
there's a few episodes where we have the odd swear word. This one, he nearly swears. He's shouting at Wilson to watch the stick. And he says, "Watch the blood stick." And he just stops himself from swearing on this one.
I wonder if that was scripted. I'm assuming it must have been. I can't imagine it's something Arthur Lowe would have chucked in. But it's possible, I suppose.
And we've got Pike reading the script in here. And he, for I had no boy girl with me. I quite like this. He's just reading the script literally instead of interpreting it.
Something the Cornish Floral Dance has got in common with Resisting the Aggressor is that they're a performance within the sketch. So Resisting the Aggressor, they're rehearsing the pageant, and Floral Dance, they're rehearsing to perform a song. And almost in the final one, in Broadcast to the Empire, they're rehearsing to go on a radio. They're all about situations that they're practicing to perfect.
Yes.
And I wonder whether the untitled sketch has anything to do with that. I know that's where all of the photographs come from, with all of the platoon dressed up as Father Christmas. But moving on to the final sketch from Christmas Night with the Stars, this is Broadcast to the Empire. This was broadcast in 1972. It was also subsequently adapted for radio, and of course that was 10 seconds from now. This was only originally a 15-minute sketch, though, and was recorded at the same time as A Brush with the Law was recorded in Series 5. What are your thoughts on this one, Tony?
Best of the three. I mean, I'm already familiar with the radio play. As you say, it's probably about twice as long. Yeah, I love it. At the beginning, you've got Hodges knocking on the side office door, and Pike's inside, and I just love it because Pike opens the door, wishes Hodges a happy Christmas, and tries to shut the door on him, and because he doesn't want him in, and it shows Pike's actually quite confident. He's not going to be bullying me. You'd have thought Hodges was the one in charge, but I just like that, where he sort of shuts the door on him.
I think it's a brilliant little scene. It's almost as if you read my notes there, because it's the very first thing that I'd written down. And I think just a conversation between Hodges and Pike there is not only almost a straight conversation. I mean, it's got slightly comedic overtones, good examination of the interaction between those two characters, and that happens very rarely. I don't think I can remember any other scene where Hodges has a conversation with a member of the platoon on his own.
The silence is me just thinking, but I don't think you've got time to wait for that.
I couldn't think of any other scene, and I thought it was really, really quite good. So I like that very much. Moving on to the main part of the sketch, I thought generally it was all okay. There are a number of areas here that I'll that we'll mention. First of all, the thing that annoyed me, I mean, it was mildly funny the first time, but it got subsequently more silly the more it happened, was Jones hitting the microphone.
That's one of my favourite bits.
Me too.
I like that. Yeah, and I don't usually like the slapstick or anything, but no, I love that.
Oh, he does it again and again and again.
I laugh each time.
I laugh at the first time he does it, and I think it's quite funny when the episode wraps up at the end.
Yes,
and I think that's quite good.
Does it.
Yeah, absolutely, because obviously it's slightly out of character. You wouldn't expect Mannerin to start blowing raspberries down a microphone. The rest of it, I think, is very strong, and I think all of the characters' lines are funny. I particularly like Fraser's Robbie Burns recital, which is kind of, you know, mirrors a similar scene in My British Buddy as well, where he reads out a poem by Robbie Burns to
yes.
Colonel Schultz.
Straight by me, he says, because he's adapted it.
Quite right, yeah. I thought that was one of the funniest parts there, certainly.
I mean, can I rattle off? I know you don't always like hearing all my favourite bits, but can I just rattle off a couple? Mannering, you got the speaker one side and the microphone the other, and the producer speaking to the platoon through the speaker, and I just quite like when Mannering tries to talk back into the speaker instead of the microphone. I like that because it makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it does. I think that's the key, is because it does actually. I mean, it's sensible, isn't it? You hear a voice coming out of something, and you think, "Well, I'll just speak back into it then." But yeah, I thought that was done well, and it also reflected, presumably, a relatively accurate picture of how radio shows may have been recorded that weren't within studios during a period. I'm not sure.
The producer asking Wilson what school he went to, because they're getting on quite well by this point. And Mannering interrupts because he doesn't want to hear anything about Wilson's public school, and I like that. There's also George Mannering's voice when he puts on his funny voice. I think it's hilarious. I love that, because he thinks he's got to sound officer-like, and he does nothing like an officer at all.
Have you watched that line with subtitles on?
No.
Well, because he says on subtitles, because I always watch these episodes with subtitles when I'm preparing for something like this, just in case there are some words that I miss. And the way they describe Mannerin's voice is pinched public school voice. So in a way, you just mentioned that Mannerin's tried to avoid any reference to Wilson's schooling. But of course, you know, by trying to emulate a voice that's posh, or an officer's voice that's posh, that's exactly what he's trying to do. And he's trying to be like Wilson, almost, just after he's told Wilson not to be like Wilson.
Yeah, and he gets it completely wrong.
Yeah, which I think is great. The producer himself... That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah. I think there were two. There was the guy who was actually on shots, and there was Wilbert... I've forgotten his name.
Maxwell.
Thank you. So I'm not quite sure which one is the executive producer, but the guy, yes, who's actually in shot.
He's the engineer.
Engineer, thank you. He is tall. You're quite right. He was head and shoulders above Ian Lavender.
I was looking at him and I was thinking, are you standing on something?
I wonder why they decided to use someone so tall, because he's obviously tall. You know, he reminded me of Peter Crouch from Liverpool's lineup. When you see him against all of his colleagues, he's clearly at least a good foot above them. But I did notice that. I thought that was good too. And Pike doing his seagulls a little lower.
I don't like that. That doesn't make me laugh.
It made me laugh. I thought it was hilarious, and they even carried that forward into 10 seconds and now, and just moved Pike's voice away from the microphone. And I found that very funny. So interesting how there's different areas here that we've centred on and said that we liked. That's about it for this fortnight. Don't forget to tune in a couple of weeks' time, where we're going to have a very special podcast indeed. I'm not going to say any more than that, but other than to make certain that you download the new podcast, which will be out in a fortnight's time. In the meantime, please feel free to get in touch with us. Warmington on c333@yahoo.co.uk is our email address. You can send us anything you like about the podcast or about program itself. Our featured episodes over the next few weeks will be Branded and The Test, so feel free to send in your comments. MP3s would be ideal, and I'll play those into the podcast. Have a wonderful couple of weeks, and I'll speak to you again very soon.
I'm Frank Williams, the vicar, the Reverend Timothy Farthing from Dad's Army, and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.